Google, Facebook. You've heard of those. What about Bleepy, Cha-Cha, and Drugstore.com? Well, they were all startups, some more successful than others. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton chats with two marketing executives with proven track records of success with startup companies. Hint, you need more marketing. That discussion starts now on Techonomics.
For all of the romance and mystique attached to legendary startups like Apple, Google, and Facebook, the reality is that 90% of startups fold within their first 24 months. Those that succeed are inspired, have vision, and a little bit of luck. But they all have taken savvy steps in company building and market focus, aka marketing best practices. The thing is, too many startups don't plug in the marketing portion of their business model until it's too late. Carol Broadbent and Tom Hogan are tech company marketing experts, and they've also co-authored a new book, The Ultimate Startup Guide, Marketing Lessons, War Stories, and Hard-Won Advice from Leading Venture Capitalists and Angel Investors. Here's part two of my chat with the author. You both have more than 20 years experience in the Valley. I've been working with startups for a long time. And part of the subtitle of the book is War Stories. And I'd be remiss if I didn't ask for some cool war stories, right? So are there some takeaways that you may have seen play out across maybe startups in different sectors? Just nascent, that seem to be native to startups, besides wanting to pull marketing upstream, other trips and falls or trip wires that you try to help them? Because you have if you pull it up and you have equity, you have a de facto board seat.
Yeah, for our limited engagement, we are at the table, and we are engaged with the board directly. And in fact, we're engaged directly with the early customers of our startup. So we take their information, their insights, their recommendations, their early experiences with the company that helps us sort of shape the story. I would say for a lot of the technology companies that we work with that are, generally speaking, enterprise startups, so these are cloud computing, networking, cybersecurity companies, big ticket items, long sales cycle. One of the things that we try and do early on is not only hear the story from the founders, but two things. One, we need to hear the story from the sales guys. So we bring the guy who has to actually sell the solution, we bring him in early to make sure we understand that story. And there's often disconnects between what a sales guy is selling and what a technology guy has built. And then the second thing is we want to see the demo. Usually the demo is built by a third person, if you want to sort of bucket it that way.
Sure.
And the demo, the way the story unfolds on the screen for the customer, is often quite different than what the sales guy is selling and what the technologist built. So it's synthesizing those or getting those to coalesce and be provocative and bold and memorable is the story or the narrative for the startup that we're trying to define.
And one of the things that I think culturally we bring to a conversation is we practice something called sales-based marketing, and that's unique in technology. And the philosophy behind sales-based marketing is that the job of marketing comes down to three words: make sales easier. If it doesn't initiate the sales cycle, shorten it, or make repeat sales easier, don't do it. And so it's odd for these guys who have been in the trenches as technologists to all of a sudden bring in a sales team and have us genuflecting to those people. But when we're in the workshop, we tell everyone's equal here. Mm-hmm. You all get a vote, except sales gets two, because they're the ones who essentially have to go out and take this and make it fit a market category or a market need. So it is unique from the standpoint you're talking about war stories. The cultures that can accommodate sales as an equal partner and say, thank God you're here, let's all get in this together, as opposed to the people who see sales as a necessary evil, but their technology is so compelling that all these guys have to do is,
right.
is take orders.
Right.
You know, as long as it feels more collaborative and that when sales gets brought in, which is later in the day, that it's brought in as an equal partner rather than subservient to technology, I think that's a real determinant of a successful company.
I had not considered that, because I'm guilty of seeing sales as a necessary evil. Let's disabuse some listeners about what marketing is. Let's pull back a little bit, okay? Because I think a lot of people, unfortunately, think that marketing is branding. It's not. We know that in this room. But let's talk a little bit about all the legwork, all the below the waterline work that marketing firms have to do to help position companies for success. Tom, do you want to start?
The important thing for us, well, it's two things. One is you no longer have to build a large marketing department. You can do it virtually or on an as-needed basis. So what used to be maybe a 12-person department can now be four people, but with a lot of contractors. And that's a whole new different way of operating that companies need to appreciate. But what that allows you to do then is the second part of our equation is when you go to market, you need to go to market with a ton of material so that you really look like you've got your act together.
Mm-hmm.
Three white papers, three videos, a complete PR firm strategy. You've got an articulated website. You've got a demo. You've got all of these things. And you don't need to produce those in-house. You can do it as long as you've got your in-house resources able to manage these ecosystems of outside resources. So I would say the two things about marketing, yes, it's much more complex in terms of the number of moving parts, but also that those parts can be outsourced, whereas in the past, it used to be a department of 12, 15 people to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And Carol, I'm wondering your takeaway from that.
Yeah, one of the big ideas that has taken hold in Silicon Valley among tech startups was this idea of lean startup. And that comes from Eric Ries and Steve Blank in their book, you know, of, I don't know, probably 10 years ago now. And that sort of mindset of sort of build it lean, when it comes to marketing, I think it means, as Tom was saying, you can really outsource a lot of what you need. You don't need to build a core team, but then you also need to plan to iterate. So you're coming up with new ideas or you're testing new ideas. And so you're not, you know, sort of syncing your plans for, you know, the next 6 months, we're going to run this particular campaign, or we're going to advertise here, or we're going to go to this trade show. In fact, you're placing some bets. You know, you're proceeding with a set of assumptions about where your customers are and how they're going to buy. And then you're building in a plan to test those ideas, measure the results, and then go from there. So that iteration, constant iteration and testing, is a mindset in marketing today that drives just about everything. The website design, the content that Tom was speaking of, the events and shows that you go to, what kind of targets that you set upon, and say in social media channels, you can target and test there just as well. So that testing and getting data to shape your investments, that is
right.
That's part and parcel of marketing today.
So you've planted the seeds of communications, internal and external, at this point. How nimble does a company, a startup company specifically, need to be when it comes to reacting to, let's say, something that happened out there, something that might touch the space that they're in? Let's say that they have an enterprise ticketing service for an airline that would have caught what happened at United Airlines. Would you capitalize on that? Do you need to be ready to go with a very nimble strike team as far as communications externally?
Well, that in the PR segment of marketing, which is just one slice, they would call that newsjacking or rapid response.
Okay.
So all the PR agencies do this. That's part of their plan. So in addition to having real solid news of, you know, new product capability or a customer win, a company's expected to have a point of view and to act as an authority. And whenever it's possible to grab the microphone, so to speak, and comment on developments in the industry, whether that's a competitor or a partner, that's what you want an authority to do. So on the PR side, yeah, that rapid response and trying to grab the headline and grab the microphone away from your competitor, that's a strategy that successful startups harness all the time.
An episode that unfortunately raises its head almost every day is anything that has to do with security.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say maybe a third of our clients are in the security space. So the moment that there's a hack or anything like that, yeah, as Carol said, you want your PR firm to, A, jump on it from your company standpoint, and then ideally your CEO has been coached to be able to chime in as quickly as the PR firm so that they become the go-to resource when the press is looking for commentary on how did this happen. How can we prevent it in the future, and what is the ramifications? Boom, you've got both the PR firm and the executive team aligned to take advantage of that.
You're right. You look like an authority. You look like a thought leader in the space, and you're newsjacking, like you said. And thank you for correcting me, because PR is only a slice of marketing. And we talked about disabusing people of the other branding leg on the stool.
Yeah.
PR is just a leg on the stool, too, because there's market research, market analysis, strategy, and everything else. And I just don't want to I don't want to minimize it. So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the biggest thing that we've seen in our tenures in marketing is that if you draw the whole idea of the left brain, right brain idea behind any scientific endeavor or anything like this. Marketing in its early days in high tech was almost exclusively right brain. It was all creative, and you couldn't validate how things were going. How's the campaign going? Great. I was at a cocktail party, and someone mentioned they saw the ad.
All anecdotal.
Yes. And now it has moved to the point that it's probably 85% left brain, measurable. When we're talking to graduating classes, and they're saying, where should I go in marketing? My daughter just graduated last week from college. She's going into digital marketing with the measurable elements and the quantifiable elements, and that is the future of the field. And it's changed so radically in the last 10 years with places like Salesforce and Marketo able to actually say, instead of now, how's the campaign doing? As Carol says, you run an A version, a B version, maybe even a C version, and you can track those within 48 hours, pick the winner, and heavy up on that. And that was never possible before.
Interesting. I feel like we've surfaced a lot of jewels, and I'm going to get around to opening up the mic for you guys. But one of the reasons I think marketing stories are interesting to the audience as it is right now is because everybody has an audience, right? Everybody is their own brand, and they kind of see themselves that way. It kind of started with reality stuff back in the day, you know, right? A little pre-Kardashian kind of stuff. But still, as the social platforms continue to get more robust and more ubiquitous, I think that marketing can be personalized a bit. And I have not been in the field very long. I've been consulting only for the last year and a half on marketing, but I know when I don't know something. So is there anything that I missed that you guys want to pull out, maybe from the book or another war story or an anecdote? I know that Carol has notes in front of her. I know that you guys have been, this book has been out for a while. We had you on earlier. Now we have you on now, and I want to take advantage of our time.
Well, comment on the whole idea of branding in high tech in particular is when we're doing a workshop for people and we say, we've got two words for you about branding in the early stages of a startup. Number one, the first word is don't. And the number two is organic, is that essentially what we're telling them is over the course of this workshop and over the course of our engagement, we're going to organically see who you guys are. And that's the brand that we want to be able to develop for you and bring to market, because you can say, I want to be witty, I want to be collegial, I want to be this or that. But if you then disabuse all of what you just said with your activities, you're not going to be able to sustain that brand in the public eye or in the company's development. So for us, if there's an overfixation on brand in a startup going forward, you know, they've read the Steve Jobs biographies and they know the importance of branding, et cetera. We have to disabuse them of that. Nine times out of ten, though, I would say branding is an afterthought for most of our high-tech companies.
Right.
And we have to actually bring that in at the end of the workshop. So we get both sides of it. We either get this overfixation on brand too early in the process, and we say, let's back away from that and see what organically develops. Or we bring it in at the end, and they start to realize that they need to codify what they've been doing and get that out to the market in a way that attracts not only investors, but potential employees and sales prospects.
And if you position it that way, right, the codification process of branding means you get the buy-in right there and everybody's on the same page. You have alignment before you go to market. Would that be overstated? I mean, if you can get that buy-in at that codification stage with the branding, if you're using it as icing on the cake before go to market, then you almost have an organic alignment too.
Yeah.
And is alignment important to when you go to market, or is it something you can correct on the way?
I think, you know, before launch, we were talking before about iterating, testing, measuring, and iterating. I think on marketing, you definitely want to do that kind of when you're still in the foxhole, you know, prior to launch. Get everybody aligned, as you just said. Alignment's a great word. And then after launch, just run with it. But, you know, keep measuring and be prepared to, you know, tweak. You know, Steve Jobs, the ultimate tweaker, right? I mean,
right.
He like, you know, perfectionist. Okay, he went too far. But just iterating, measuring and iterating after launch, I think is the key.
When do you get to exhale during this engagement? Do you get to exhale at all? Is it always just churn when it comes to going to market and getting launched?
It is a kind of a high wire act. It is a very intense period. Some companies, and we kind of caution against this too, we see some startup teams who've been in the foxhole, they've been in the bunker for a couple of years, so they're so hungry to launch their product. That's a massive milestone in the life of the company. But one of the dangers is to get over fixated on that milestone. It is a milestone. It's not the finish line. So launching effectively, strongly, boldly, and having alignment, as you said, great word, and then keep going. You're going to have a lot of content to create. You're going to have a lot of customers to take care of and make happy and to retain. And you've got more product development and market development ahead. So it's a long haul, but, you know, it's exciting.
Sounds exciting, sounds draining.
Yeah.
And it sounds continual.
Yeah. So.
But
yeah.
You raise the right point, Jason, in terms of when is there the potential to relax or exhale, as you said. And what we found, in fact, we've got a whole chapter about it in the book, is the equivalent of postpartum depression in these companies' history, is they focus so exclusively and extensively on launching the company. And that means that all of a sudden the new website goes live, there's 12 pieces of coverage, and all of a sudden too many companies have geared everything around that, and then they sit back and they go, whew, that's over. And then they wonder why 3 to 5 days later they're all sitting around and the phones haven't rung. And, well, the market has moved on to the next launch.
Right.
And these guys are sitting in their apartment with the beer spilled on the carpet and wondering what happened. And so, as Carol points out, you need to have a sustained campaign of webinars and lead development so that people who read the articles about you then get a second jolt of you,
there you go,
through an invitation that says, you know, if you liked what you read about last week, we're going to have a webinar next week on this, and then we're going to tickle you with 2 or 3 outbound campaigns that remind you of the pain that we're solving. And if you don't have that, you're going to have that post-launch depression where everyone, and then they start blaming each other or the PR firm, and it happens just because there's too much of a fixation on that one event, and then it's kind of, and that's the wrong time to relax.
Yeah, we usually advise, 90 days, have sort of 90 days of content and programs in the can prior to launch. So you have some room to run with it, take a deep breath, and then...
Wow, that's a hell of a war chest when it comes to editorial or content. That's great.
It's hard. I mean...
I imagine it is.
And how many of our clients have actually done that? I don't even want to tell you. But that's the best practice, right? And, you know, everybody's pulling so hard. Launch is exciting. It's really exciting. And, you know, like these guys have been burning the midnight oil, working 7 days a week. Their families are tired. It's a great moment. Those are great moments for us, too. You get the T-shirt.
Yeah, that's right.
You got to have the new T-shirt.
That's like currency in Silicon Valley, is having that launch T-shirt.
But, you know, you asked for war stories.
Yeah.
One of the things that we would say is if a company has more T-shirts than they have products, it's time to walk, you know. And we've seen some of them who just kind of, in the absence of market to presence, they keep validating themselves with internal T-shirts that people wear around the shop.
Yeah.
And at that point, you short the stock and start walking.
Right on.
Yeah. It's software release 1.8 T-shirt.
Yeah.
We've been speaking with Tom Hogan, Carol Broadbent. They're the co-authors of The Ultimate Startup Guide. There's 46 rooms of marketing experience, and one of them is mine. So these guys know what they're talking about. Thank you for coming in. Love having you.
Pleasure.
Thanks so much.
That was part 2 of 2 of my chat with Carol Broadbent and Tom Hogan. They are tech company marketing experts. They've also co-authored a new book, The Ultimate Startup Guide, Marketing Lessons, War Stories, and Hard-Won Advice from Leading Venture Capitalists and Angel Investors. And that's it for this week's show. We appreciate you listening, whether it's through broadcast or podcast. For all of our guests, subjects, and links, please go to kgoradio.com/techonomics. It all lives there. We also podcast via Audioboom, Stitcher, and iTunes. And we post links and the music we use at facebook.com/techonomicsradio. Maybe pop over there, you know, give us a like. For executive producer Mike Anthony and producer Liana Wilcox, I'm host and writer Jason Middleton. Have great weeks, everybody.